Serpo, inhabited by Ebens, a race of extraterrestrials who might be more dangerous than we have been led to believe. This program is sponsored by the Retro UFO Spaceship Convention to be held Saturday, April 29th at the world-famous Integratron. Stay tuned for more information on this exciting event later in the show. And now, from the Flamingo Hotel and Casino in Laughlin, Nevada, here is your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, this is Jerry Pippin. We're in Laughlin at the UFO Congress. The Alien Exchange Program is the talk of the conference here in Laughlin. 12 Americans in exchange for Ebens from the planet Serpo in a faraway star system. Did it happen? Why did it stop? Did it stop? We had the man at the center of the controversy, Bill Ryan, from England. He developed the Serpo.com website, and he knows all about Serpo. Welcome to the show, Bill. And I must say, it's good to meet you in person.
I'm very well, thanks, Jerry. It's nice to be talking to you again.
Bill, first of all, I must tell you, we have sources here that tell us that you have had contact right here in Laughlin. In fact, I have been told that you have a sample of Eben writing and some more of the team commander's logs.
Wow.
Now, I understand you were given these with an understanding, really, or at least you took it that way, that you were supposed to post them before you made them public here at the conference, so you didn't mention it when you were on stage a couple hours ago. Now, I want to get back to these developments in a few minutes, but really, we need to give some background for those who are not familiar with the Serpo story. Now, I know that they can go and listen to our previous interview we did a couple of months ago and get the background. But do you mind going over a little bit of the background detail to bring us up to date, up to speed?
As some of your listeners may be very well aware, the initial information was coming through to Victor Martinez, who was then streaming it to his private email list, of which I was a member, and then I would put it on the website. And so the whole that was the route that the information followed in November and December. This has changed, and it's an interesting evolution of how this whole thing has been rolling on. The last information that Victor received from Anonymous was on the 21st of December, after a period when Victor was well aware that Anonymous had been getting anxious about various things. And then everything went quiet. And it went quiet for so long that a lot of people, Victor and myself included, we thought, well, this is all stopped now, suddenly. We've lost it. There's going to be nothing else. And we'll just have to forever scratch our heads trying to figure out what all this is about, because we're not going to get any more pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. Now, suddenly, out of the blue, on the 24th of January, after a five-week gap, I started getting information, and it wasn't coming through Victor at all. And it was a surprise to me. It was a surprise to Victor. Victor took it really well, because it was kind of like, I mean, I could understand him feeling a little bit sort of jilted about this. But Victor, to his great credit, he was totally supportive. It became apparent, and I use that word very advisedly, because it's in this whole Serpo release, there are very few things that have been completely clear. But one of the things that became apparent was that Anonymous was Anonymous and his colleagues between them were not completely happy about how Victor had been processing the information. And this is really quite interesting. Now, I say this in the full context that Victor is some, I support his integrity completely, I support his intentions. He's had a really difficult job, he did the very best he could, and he and I want exactly the same thing. Now, Victor is a trained journalist, and he is an instinctive editor. And what he had been doing in November and December was the information that had been coming through, an email here, an email there, and a little bit of this, and a little bit of that, He'd been cutting and pasting and collating it and saving that bit until next week and putting it together like a sequence of magazine articles. And even now, he says, this is not a secret, he says that he's still got information which he hasn't posted because he was kind of saving it up to make posts with, and he's got all these little bits of information that he hasn't actually included in his editorial presentation. Mm-hmm. Now, what this means, I mean, because for Victor, it was the presentation that was a thing, which as it is for all editors and journalists, the presentation is the important thing. A lot of the core data had been lost. So the original emails from Anonymous that he got, not all of them, but most of them, had been deleted by his web TV system. So we still don't know some of the original information that was actually sent verbatim. We still don't know that. And what I'm given to understand is that Anonymous was not happy, or Anonymous and his colleagues, or somewhere in there, they were not happy.
Wait a minute, Bill. I think you just said there's probably more than one Anonymous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this is known now. I mean, Victor said, and I can't remember where this is known when we last spoke, but Victor clarified that there's from his experience, there's an 85% Anonymous, a 13% Anonymous, and a 2% Anonymous. So at least there are three of them. And then that was kind of mixed in with little bits of information from Paul McGovern and Gene Laskowski, and maybe other people who Victor hasn't told us about. And so the whole thing is a kind of chimera. It's a creature with many heads. And this in itself retrospectively accounts for the differences in style, differences in writing style. Victor adds his own comments in there. And it's kind of quite hard to research to figure out exactly what's going on. Now, the indications are that Anonymous, or Anonymous and his colleagues, or whoever it is that they weren't happy with this. When they sent the information to me, the instructions were not to change anything.
Yeah, Bill, these logs, they're difficult to read, but I can understand that. If you're writing events down by hand, probably you're not going to worry about every word and the text.
Yeah, these were journal entries, and they were presented as a kind of stream of consciousness. Even the writing didn't have any paragraphs in it. It was just like a whole bunch of continuous text. But there are some clues which are kind of hidden in there. And I put this on the website exactly as I received it. I heard something from Anonymous afterwards. He said, "This was exactly how we wanted it." Quote. And this for me was very, very interesting because it sure didn't read. It wasn't easy to read. It wasn't broken up into chunks. There were spelling mistakes. That's how they wanted it. It's really, really, really interesting. This should give us a significant clue about something or other. And in those spelling... Well,
Bill, maybe this thing is not a diary. Maybe it's something else. You have an idea?
That's a really good question. What I can think of, the only thing I can think of, is that this information is not meant to be clear. It's not designed to be clear at this stage.
Now, Bill, you have a photograph that was given to you here, too. I don't know if it's a graphic or one of those Hollywood statues. I don't think it's real, but I understand, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but I understand that this is actually very close to what the Ebens look like. I mean, how come all of the riddles on this thing? I mean, it's just, you know, it really is strange.
Well, let me present... this is something that was suggested to me by somebody who I have come to know and trust and respect enormously, who's in the intelligence community, who doesn't wish his name to be known. He's somebody whose name that anyone would recognize, and he's been around a while. And he said to me, you know what, this information is going to be ambiguous, it's going to be hard to accept, it's going to be, you know, hard for people to come to grips with, and you know what, he said, you should be prepared for the fact that it will always be that way. And I said, well, why? Why don't they just make it clear? Why don't they just present us with proof? Why don't they just give us a photograph of a disc and some American astronauts flying the flag and some Ebens sitting in front, you know? And he said, no, he said, it's not going to be that way. He said, the reason for this is because there are a lot of people in the population, probably including some people who you and I know, and they are rigid disbelievers for whatever psychological reason they have. They will not accept this. They refuse to accept it. They don't want to accept the reality of extraterrestrial contact. And for those people, you can't throw them into shock and trauma by providing them with undeniable evidence of something that's going to completely wreck their whole worldview. The gentle and responsible thing to do is to present the information in such a way that anyone who's a rigid disbeliever can continue to disbelieve it with their worldview and their self-esteem and their ego strength all intact, so that you're not throwing people into shock and you're not running the risk of riots in the streets like in the Orson Welles War of the Worlds episode back in 1938, and so that you don't have economic collapse and the religious fundamentalists starting to burn the politicians at the stake. You know, I mean, it's like, I mean, I say this metaphorically, but that's the kind of thing that no government wants to be responsible for causing some kind of sociological trauma. And therefore, the nature of the information is going to be ambiguous, so that anyone who has real trouble with it has got a way of denying it without them being forced to believe it, and therefore the information is the way that it is.
You know, Bill, the puzzling thing is the anonymous disclosures. Is this official, or is this the group of people that are being the Lone Ranger out there? You know what I mean?
I absolutely understand the question. I don't know. What I think is happening is this. This is my best guess, mm-hmm. and maybe next week I'll have a different idea for whatever reasons, but at the moment what I'm leaning to believing is that this is a maverick disclosure, meaning that it's a bunch of people, possibly elderly, possibly who are involved in the project in some peripheral way. They had access to the information. They've taken it upon themselves to blow the whistle. That's what I meant by a maverick disclosure. Yes. It's not something that has been
official.
That has been deliberately orchestrated by, I mean, MJ-12 or the president or any, you know, somebody's taken it upon themselves to do this. And opportunistically, the powers that be have thought, right, someone's blowing the whistle here. We'll support them by not silencing them, by not denying it, by looking the other way.
We're talking with Bill Ryan, and we're talking about Serpo.org, his website, and whether or not this thing really is true or just a great tale. Bill, the thing that bothers me about this, and it's just not unique to this particular disclosure, but almost all conspiracies, when they start unraveling or you start hearing about them, all of the characters, all of the players are dead.
The very fact that this disclosure is actually happening and is continuing demonstrates to me that this has got an official sanction, even if it is of the nature of don't stop them.
Another thing, I understand President Reagan called a halt to this thing in 1985. He stopped the trading of the ambassadors or the personnel from each of the planets. I don't know why he would do that. I mean, if it were successful, you would think. I mean, what happened?
It's like, the last Serpo astronaut died in 2002. Why couldn't this release have happened 5 years ago? Then we'd have had somebody to try and chase down. There's nobody left. And so what can we do? That's right.
You know, Bill, I'm going to do a show in which I read part of these logs from the captain's logs. I mean, that they are, I think, spellbinding. But there's some errors or at least some erroneous information that was leaked ahead of time or anyway, there's some confusion. I don't know exactly what. I mean, for instance, in the first log you released, it appeared that one of the Serpo people
one of our people, part of the U.S. entourage to Serpo, died on the journey to Serpo. Now, this is confusing because I think earlier it was said that two people died of accidents there, or at least one and maybe another one of illness. I don't really remember. It's not clear to me. Can you help me out a little bit?
It's not clear. This is one of many questions. One of the recent bits of information that came through, and actually this is interesting because it came through from Victor Martinez, who got this information in an email from somebody else who was peripherally involved in the project, is that there was a supposed follow-up exchange program to the original one. The original one, apparently, was called Project Crystal Knight, spelt K-N-I-G-H-T, like the Knights of the Round Table. Mm-hmm. Project Crystal Knight. And the follow-up exchange program was entitled Project Bishop. And then we heard that this was cancelled by Reagan, cancelled by President Reagan. Trying to get the dates right, 1985. Was that Reagan's time? Yeah. I don't know anything more. I don't know whether this is true. That comes from a single source. It comes from somebody who sent an email to Victor Martinez who just knew about this. This is where things start to get even more muddled or muddy than they were in the first place. Because the exact sequence of events around that story was this. I got a message on the website contact form, which was an anonymous message, because it's possible to do this through the contact form. That's why I established it that way, so that I could receive anonymous messages. And this correspondent said, there's more to the story than meets the eye. One of the team members died on the way there, which contradicts what Anonymous's initial statement was, that the couple died in accidents when they were there. I said, no, one person died on the way there. And not only that, but his body was cloned by the Ebens. And I can't remember the whole message right now, but it's like that's all in the ZR, you would say ZR repro file, meaning Zeta Reticuli reproduction file, and talked about closed cycle cloning, all kinds of weird stuff. And I sent this off to Victor because this is a weird message, and I said, hey, what's this? Is there any truth to this? Victor relayed it to Anonymous. Anonymous got back to Victor and said, this is true, but don't mention a word of it, otherwise everything's off. And so Victor sat on it. I knew about that at the time. I was told not to breathe a word of it. And this kind of cover story continued. And the cover story was that two of them had died by accident when they were on the planet. Now, suddenly, at the end of January, the 24th of January, or whenever it was, we got this team commander's log came through, in which all of this was stated very openly, that, you know, that I think it was team member 308 and he died on the way and they didn't know what was happening to him, and then they went into this incredible, and there's this amazing story where the whole, you see, up until then we'd had this perception of the Ebens, they're friendly and they give us technology and they want a dialogue and they want to exchange and they want to, you know, it's like, we'll give you transport and explore our planet and we're delighted that you're here. And then this other side of them suddenly is that, you know, and by the way, we're cutting up your dead colleague's body and we're cloning them with some strange creature from another planet and we hope you don't mind, you know, but we just want to do it, so we're going to do it. And I was quite shocked when I heard that story. I didn't know what people would think, and I was a little reluctant to post it, but it's like, well, this is what we've got, so we've got to post it. And also, it contradicted what Victor Martinez had originally been told, which is don't release any of this information. Now, one of the things that's happened as a result of this is that the question has been raised, very understandably, you know, whether, well, is Victor's Martinez the same as, is Victor's Anonymous the same as the Anonymous who's been, is there a possibility that one group associated with disclosure is actually trying to disinform or to misinform or to kind of counter the efforts of the other group, and one saying we tell the story like this and the other one saying we tell the story like that. I don't know the answers to these questions. Victor Martinez still thinks, as of now, what is the date today, 3rd of March, Victor Martinez believes that his Anonymous is the original, is the real Anonymous, and that, I mean, this is all inverted commas, and my Anonymous is an imposter. He believes this at the moment. I am absolutely not so sure about this. I think there are reasons to believe that the opposite, or that somebody is misinforming Victor. You see, but what's happening now is the plot is thickening, and the plot is thickening. Oh, sorry, and to understand the degree to which the plot is thickening and how to sort this out, it seems to me that we've got to look at the possibility that if there is a pro-disclosure faction that is looking the other way and sort of thereby supporting this maverick disclosure, there could be an anti-disclosure faction who's causing trouble, who's misinforming, who's getting in touch with Anonymous, who's getting in touch with Victor saying, you know, he's not the real Anonymous, I'm the real Anonymous. You see, just now we were talking about, it looks increasingly likely that there is a disinformational component that's entering this whole arena here that we've got. We don't know quite how to sort it out. We don't know quite what's true. We don't know quite what's not. And all we can do, really, is just collect all the data. We're still trying to find out whether we've got one jigsaw puzzle or two, because we've got all the bits all kind of mixed up.
And, Bill, Ryan, there's also the question of the photographs. I mean, we were promised photos of the Earth beings on Serpo posing with the Serponians.
Yeah. Let me just...
That hasn't happened.
You see, just supposing this possibility, supposing Mr. Anonymous was promised photographs by somebody, and he believed this, you know, it's like, I've got photographs, and I'm going to give them to you, and then you can release them. And then, as soon as that information is made publicly, then this guy, who never intended to give him the photographs in the first place, was saying, aha, sorry, there's been a bit of a problem, you know, it's going to be next week. And then, Mr. Anonymous, the original one, is starting to look like a, you know, like a hoaxer or a fraudster or a, you know, well, you promised this and we're not delivering. It's just like these things have to be seen in this context of the possibility of there being something, some legitimate reason why these photographs haven't come forward. Either that, you see, because it kind of makes the story much less believable if the photographs are promised and then they're not being delivered. I've given up now. Well, no, I haven't given up. That's too dramatic. I was waiting for the photographs every day. I thought, well, maybe it's this morning, maybe it's lunchtime, maybe it's this evening. It's like I don't think about it anymore because I'm not holding my breath. I would like to think, obviously, that they're on the... I mean, the very idea of holding in my hands a photograph that's taken from another planet is one of the reasons why I'm hanging on in here. But I don't think it's going to be tonight. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow. It might not be in 2 months' time. It might not be ever. And contextual information that... I'm choosing my words carefully here. That there's a complicated story in the background. I mean, we're starting to get hints and clues in this conversation we're having here about how complicated the story can be. We don't know how many different Anonymouses there are. We don't know. What their agendas might possibly be. I mean, there's some twists and turns to the story. Now,
Bill, I mean, this whole exchange program, for instance, we sent them 12 astronauts, right, Serponauts. How many did they send us? Three Serpentonians? Is that it?
This is another good question. We don't know how many Ebens have come here. We just don't know. This is part of the problem. It's generally accepted in ufology that there were five. There's EB1 who came with Roswell. There's EB2 who turned up at Holloman, stayed from 64 to 84. And then there's EB3 who came from, I think, 78 to 92 or something like that, with two aides, assistants. which makes five. Maybe there are more, maybe you don't know about it. This is the whole problem in the ufology, because you know, and then it's like, according to some of the stories you heard, there are hundreds of them in the Dulcie base, or maybe those aren't the Ebens, maybe those are the Greys, and what's the difference between them anyway? And the whole thing starts to get really confused.
Bill Ryan, I have some other things to talk to you about Serpo, and then we're going to listen to a little bit of the reading of one of the logs. Still got lots of exciting things coming up here on Serpo, so don't go away. Let's take time out and find out a little bit more about the Retro UFO Spaceship Convention.
Step into a modern-day time machine and revisit the UFO phenomena of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Saturday, April 29th, it all comes together in the high desert of Southern California. The Retro UFO Spaceship Convention at the world-famous Integratron. Tours of the giant rock and the Integratron, plus lots of other great events, including a speaker lineup of UFO researchers who will unveil many amazing facts about this time period and the reported visits to Earth by the space people. View a video of the original spacecraft conventions. Food, fun, vendor areas, art exhibits, car club exhibitions, space rocks, live bands, and much, much more. Hurry, space is limited, so make your reservations now. Click on the banner on this page, and we'll see you at the Space Convention.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the Flamingo at the UFO Congress. We're talking with Bill Ryan about Serpo. And as we left the discussion, Bill, we were getting into some interesting things about the planet itself.
You know, Bill, evidently Serpo is not the most hospitable of climates. Lots of radiation from double sun system. Two people, though, did stay. Is that right?
Two stayed behind. One of the reasons for... It's like all the others have died. We know that this was a high radiation environment, a higher radiation environment in the binary sun. 43 hours, of which 38 are daylight, and you've got two suns in the sky, and there's going to be more radiation. And... it has been stated by Anonymous that many of them suffered the after effects of the radiation after they come back to this planet. This is one of the reasons why they're not around anymore. We haven't got anyone who's still alive. And so it's reasonable to assume that if two of them stayed there in that environment, they're probably dead by now, and maybe they died earlier. They stayed voluntarily, and I think the words were... But Victor relayed to me when I checked this out, they were not ordered to return. It's most interesting. It was suggested to me by somebody just today. I guess an obvious thing. It's like, well, if there were two women who went on the program,
then a man and a woman stayed.
Maybe they stayed. It's like an Adam and Eve story all over again.
Right.
Who knows? Yeah. It's an amazing thing to speculate. And then maybe they've had children. I mean, then where are we? You know, I mean, this is in pure speculation. And it's just one of the 101 questions that this whole story generates, and we don't have answers to any.
You know, looking at this thing objectively, I am just of the opinion there's more than one Anonymous, Bill.
Now, this actually dovetails into what I was saying earlier, that I personally, at the moment, am absolutely not convinced that this source who is contacting Victor, saying he's Anonymous, is the same person who I've been getting, who's been routing his information to me. But they're Anonymous. How can we tell?
To me, you could tell who Anonymous is by just looking at the emails.
A lot of people have understandably been wanting to know how I can show whether, this is all in inverted commas, whether my Anonymous is the same as Victor's Anonymous, and can't you compare the IP addresses of the emails? And I've been refusing to do that. And the reason for this, It's kind of like I came, it's like a couple of days ago I sort of came clean with this. And the exact facts of the matter are that when Victor received the information that the photographs were forthcoming, there was then immediately the question of how would he receive the photographs, because he's got this web TV system that doesn't receive attachment, which isn't very sophisticated. It doesn't. He can't get attachments on this, and Victor and I had a phone call, and we were trying to figure out together, because at this point we thought, you know, that they might send the solution that Victor and I agreed on about how they could send the photographs at any time they want to is by uploading this information to the website server by FTP, File Transfer Protocol. Your listeners who know a little bit about websites and IT and stuff will know that this is a way to get information. It's like an electronic mailbox. I can look in the server and then there it will be the next morning. And so Victor relayed this information to Anonymous, who then knows how to put information on the server. And this is what this is how I've been getting my information. I haven't been receiving emails. I don't have a two-way communication with Anonymous. It's one way only, absolutely at his beck and call, whichever way he wants to do it. And I don't have any IP addresses. And so this is how come this. It's like I don't have a relationship with Anonymous in the same way as Victor does, and it's all been coming through the server. And this I didn't want to say this in the previous few weeks because I wanted to give the impression that I never made any false statements, but I wanted to give the impression that I was in a dialogue with Anonymous, I'm kind of saying that now on the record because I hope that clears this whole thing up. This is of sufficient importance. I mean, it's interesting that the plot has thickened in various ways, that there is evidence that there are different groups that may be trying to disinform each other. If I was in a court of law and I was under oath and you were a cross-examining lawyer and you asked me, you know, was I certain about this and was I certain about that? The absolute honest truth is I'm not really certain about anything, but I've got some very strong guesses. And so, I mean, that sounds like I'm undermining my own case. But it's like the intellectually honest truth is that I don't absolutely know anything. There's some things which I'm 99% sure about. There's some things which I'm 95% sure about. There's some things which I'm 80% sure about. I'm not 100% sure of very much. But I really do... See, but if I wasn't sufficiently sure that this was worthwhile, this is important, this is worth considering, there's something going on here, I think I am 100% sure that this isn't a kid in the basement who's making this all up. If it's disinformation, it's being orchestrated at a high government level. If it's for real, it's possible that errors have crept in to the process at various points. One of the things I wanted to mention earlier on about the advantage of not editing the logs by running it through a spell checker is because there's real evidence, like, for instance, use of the word the Ebens were not hostile towards us, meaning that they were friendly, is spelt H-O-S-T-E-L. That suggests to me that this has been transcribed from an audio tape by somebody who wasn't really thinking about their job. They were working overtime and it was quite late at night and they're just, yeah. It was hostile. And of course, they meant H-O-S-T-I-L-E. Or maybe it was machine transcribed and maybe we didn't get the finished, polished version that was proofread and checked before it went into the 3,000-page report. Maybe we got an intermediate version. And so we got these little clues here that suggest that this isn't hoaxed. This is a wonderful fingerprint that this came from an audio transcription of something that was something, you know, that was previously an audio tape. There are other clues as well, which I don't really have time to go into, that the logs, which are this stream of consciousness, were actually may well have been the responses from a hypnotic from a hypnosis session with the hypnotist's commands edited out, you know, because the logs read like, you know, like the equivalent would be, and I say this just as an illustrative effect, it's like my alarm clock's going off, okay, I'm turning it off now, and now I'm getting up, and now I'm putting my bedroom slippers on, and okay, now I'm putting the kettle on and I'm making myself some coffee. And it's actually, when it's a little bit like this, you think, well, the guy's not going to have time to be writing it. It's like a continuous running commentary on what he's doing. How is he actually writing this stuff down at the same time as he's doing all this stuff? But if you imagine that a hypnotist is actually saying, maybe the logs were lost, maybe this information was trying to be recalled 13 years later when they returned to this planet, maybe they had a memory loss, maybe who knows what happened, and the hypnotist says, okay, what happens now? Well, what's happening now is my alarm clock's going off. Okay, good, continue. Now I'm getting up, and what do you say? Okay, and now I'm putting my slippers on, and now I'm going to the bathroom, and it starts to read like a hypnotist's yes. session. For me, this explains a lot. I'm not an expert in hypnosis. A number of people with expertise in hypnosis said, yeah, this fits. I'd also had somebody with expertise who says, no, I don't think so. Now, this is one of the things to be considered. We talked about 101 questions earlier. This is the 102nd question. And the reason why I got onto this is because it's like it's worthwhile looking at this in great detail. Some of the things which don't make sense at first, you look at it from another angle, and you think, oh, that's what's happening. You know, it's a transcribed audio tape from a hypnosis session that's then been rewritten again, because they didn't have word processing in those days, with the hypnotist questions taken out, and suddenly you've got something that just reads like this weird stream of consciousness, and people think, well, that's not a diary. Well, it wasn't a diary, maybe. And so what I'm kind of saying here is that there are compelling reasons not to dismiss the information. We need to think creatively. We need to wonder what is it that we don't know that could explain this thing. And the metaphor, and I think this really is my closing comment, the metaphor is that we've got a big jigsaw. You know those things you used to get for Christmas when you were a kid? You got a 2,000-piece jigsaw puzzle with a really complicated picture, and they're all on the table, and we've got about 100 pieces connected together. The other 1,900, they're still in the box, and we don't know what to do with them. And we just got to be patient. We've got to look at this carefully and dispassionately. Just because it doesn't seem to make sense, we may not have fitted the pieces together properly yet. It needs more time. I want the information to keep coming. The nightmare scenario is if it all suddenly stopped. You know, it's just like whatever it takes, let's be patient. Maybe it'll keep coming. And if it does, then maybe we'll have more pieces and then we'll know more. Jerry, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thank you, Bill Ryan. We're going to close out the show with a little bit of the captain's log, some of the dialogue. We're going to do an entire show featuring the log one of these days, but I thought it would be fitting to close this hour on Serpo with excerpts from the captain's log. We have allowed the Ebens to utilize 308's body for experiments. They took all of 308's blood, which was against my approval. It was time to get the body. It had been 18 months. We were asked to go to another location and wait, but I did not want to leave his body alone. The Ebens insisted that the doctor would explain to us what was happening with 308's body. The Eben doctor, who number two said spoke English, would meet us. I told the Ebens that I would leave two people, 7:54 and 8:99. They would guard the body, and I would take the others to the location to meet the doctor. I felt this was going to be a confrontation. I told 5:18 and 4:20 to go back to our building and get our handguns and come back as soon as possible. When we got to the new location, one of the Ebens, who identified himself as a doctor, spoke very good English. This doctor had a strange-sounding voice, almost like a human's voice. This doctor did not have the high-pitched accent like the other Ebens, number one and two. I was very impressed with the doctor. The Eben doctor explained that the Ebens had done experiments with 308's body because they considered it an honor to have a specimen to work with like the man who was dead. The doctor told us they have used 308's body to create a type of cloned human being. I stopped the doctor at that moment and told him that the body of 308 was the property of the United States of America, and they had no right to keep it. The body did not belong to the Ebens. I did not authorize any experimentation on the body of 308. I explained that humans consider a body to be a religion. The doctor explained the body was gone. The doctor said all of the blood organs, were taken out and used to clone other beings. The use of the word beings really scared me and the others. 899 became extremely angry. He called the doctor a crazed maniac. I ordered 899 to be quiet. Then I told 203 to take 899 out of the building. I realized this matter could really blossom into a major incident. I could not allow that to happen. The doctor was very straightforward. He advised me nothing else would be done with the body, but he also said there was very little left of the body. We returned to the huts. Everyone was upset, especially 899. I told each member to calm down. I explained our situation, that we were on a foreign planet surrounded by Ebens. There was really not much we could do. We were 40 light years or so away from Earth. We wanted to go to the laboratory where the body was. 633, 700 and myself were escorted by Eben number 2 to the laboratory. We were taken there by some sort of heliport device. The facility was large by Eben standards. The building looked like a large single-story windowless school. We then walked into the hallway to another larger room. There we met our English-speaking doctor. We saw many other Ebens, all dressed in bleach-colored one-piece suits. As we went inside the building to the other rooms, the doctor explained that all of the building was used for cloning. There were rows of containers. They looked like glass bathtubs. Inside each bathtub were bodies. I was shocked. These were strange-looking bodies, not human bodies. We started walking down the space between the tubs. There were hideous-looking creatures inside the tubs. I asked the doctor what type of creatures these were. The doctor told us they were creatures from other planets. We asked if the creatures were alive when they came, or were they dead? The doctor said all the creatures were alive when they were brought to the facility. 700 asked if the creatures were taken from other planets and brought to Serpo without permission. The doctor just said they were brought here for experiments. The first creature I see inside one of the tubs looks like a porcupine. It seems to have a tube placed inside of it. The tubes lead to a box underneath the tub. The second creature I saw looked like a monster. It had a large head, big, deep-set eyes, no ears, a mouth, but no teeth. It was about 5 feet long and had two lower legs, but no feet. It has two arms, but does not appear to have any elbows. It has hands, but no fingers. This creature also had a tube going through it. The next creature looked like nothing I can compare it to. It had blood-red skin, two spots in the middle, and maybe eyes, no arms or legs. It had very strange odor.
skin appeared to be blotchy. It had scales, much like a fish. Maybe it is a fish. The next creature was human-like, but the skin was white, the color white. The skin was wrinkled. The head was large with two eyes, two ears, and a mouth. The neck was very small. The head almost looked as if it could sit on the lower part of the torso. The chest was thin. The arms were curved with hands, but no thumbs. The legs were also curved. They had feet, but only three toes. I couldn't look at any more of the creatures. We walked down another hallway, through a room, down a ramp, came into a room that looked like a hospital room. There were many beds. In each bed, there was a living being, as the doctor called them. The doctor said each of these beings were alive. Each of them were well cared for. The doctor said they were being lived. I asked Eben Two what that meant. Eben Two used the English word grown. 700 asked the doctor if these were the cloned individuals. The doctor said yes. The doctor said they were grown like plants. 700 asked him how they did this, and the doctor said they used the parts to grow complete beings. We took a look at these beings. They looked like humans with dog heads. These beings were not awake. They were either drugged or they were asleep. I then asked the big question. I asked the doctor if 308's body was used to create a being. The doctor said matter-of-factly, yes. And showed us the being. This being, with our teammate's blood and cells, looked like a large Eben. But the head and the legs were similar to humans. It was amazing that these things would grow so fast. This thing was an adult. We had to leave. We left the building. This was a building that I would not want to see again. I had seen the dark side of this civilization. The Ebens are not the humane civilization that we thought they were.
Serpo, Fact or Fiction, has been sponsored by the Retro Spaceship Convention, to be held on Saturday, April 29th, at the world-famous Integratron in the Southern California High Desert. Executive producer for this program has been Larry Dickin. Our thanks to Anonymous, Bill Ryan, and Victor Martinez for their help in putting together the content of this show. On location production by Jim Smith. Your announcer has been Roberta Scott.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate.
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.